Believe in yourself, cause it starts with you, and then everyone else will believe you too. And if it looks like you're the only believer around, just keep on believing, don't put yourself down, just believe.
Our guest this week grew up in Clarkston, Michigan, and earned a BA in communications from Calvin College and a JD from Pepperdine University School of Law. From 2013 to 2016, he was the Assistant Attorney General with the Michigan Department of Attorney General. Since 2016, he's been a special agent for the federal government. And in 2018, he founded the Joseph Project, which works to connect human trafficking survivors with pro bono legal services. His name, Nate Napper. And I'm Jack Rasula, and this is Anything Is Possible, a News Talk 760 WJR. I'm Jack Rasula. This is Anything Is Possible. And we're talking to the founder of the Joseph Project, Nate Napper. Nate, welcome. A real honor to have you.
Thanks for having me on tonight, Jack.
Can we start by talking about your childhood and your mom and your dad, please?
Happy to do that. Well, Jack, I had a very happy childhood. I was born in Westchester, Pennsylvania. So I frequently joke with people that I was born in West Philadelphia like the Fresh Prince. And I have no memory of it. We moved to Dallas, Texas when I was quite young. And so Dallas is where my earliest memories come from. And, you know, I remember doing many of the things that a typical kid down there in the warm weather would do. There were many days where we would be outside swimming in the family swimming pool, rollerblading. Some of my very happiest memories are when my dad would take us to the Dallas Cowboy games. This was back when, you know, Aikman was the quarterback and the team never lost and they were in their Super Bowl heyday. I'm sure the Lions fans out there probably don't want to talk about that too much, but those are some great memories that I have. And, you know, when I think of those games, I do think of my dad. You know, you mentioned my parents, and when I think of my dad, I think of somebody who was an extremely hard worker, was a consistent worker, somebody who taught us discipline, somebody who encouraged us to be industrious, even from a very early age. When I think of my mom, I think of somebody who began her career as a French teacher, but then transitioned into being a stay-at-home mother and loved us in the best way that I can imagine. She did all the things that you would think that a loving mother would do to set us up for success. So she made us our meals and she got us to school, and both my parents taught us the value of church and of faith. And so when I think of my parents, I think of very loving individuals who always had our best interests at heart and did everything that they could to set us up for success. They had endless energy, and I was always amazed by the love that they had for me and for my brothers and my sister.
What were your dreams, Nate, growing up?
Yeah, you know, I started dreaming at an early age of what I might become when I got a little bit older. You know, for me, Jack, 9/11 occurred when I was a sophomore in high school. And so, you know, I was still quite young when that event happened. And it, of course, changed the geopolitical landscape for many years to come. And I remember sitting there in my high school class there as a sophomore thinking, you know, it's got to be somebody's job to make sure that this doesn't happen to us again. This terrorism threat is a very real threat that we're going to confront for the foreseeable future. And it was at that time that I started thinking very seriously that I could be a part of the solution. And so I would say that it was about my sophomore year of high school where I made the decision that I wanted to join the intelligence field, whether it was the CIA or the FBI or some other type of organization like that.
You got a communications degree from Calvin College, and then you go to Pepperdine University to get a law degree. This Pepperdine University is like for very wealthy people. It's got this aura. Tell us about Pepperdine University.
Happy to. Well, so Pepperdine University is in suburban Malibu, California. And so, you know, it's tucked away in the Santa Monica Mountains overlooking the Pacific Ocean. And I will tell you, there is not a more wonderful institution academically in the entire world. I'm totally convinced of it. I loved my time at Pepperdine. It's an extremely special place. It's a place of faith, which is something I very much appreciated about it and really factored into my decision to go out there. But one of the things that I really loved about Pepperdine the most was one of its mottos, which comes from the book of Matthew, chapter 10. It says, "Freely you've received, freely give." And for me, you know, that really set the tone for my Pepperdine career as a law student, because I understood going into this institution that this was not a place that was training us up for our own selfish gain. Rather, this was a place where we were going to train so that we could be sent out in the service of other people. And so, you know, that freely you've received, freely give motto struck me from the very earliest stages of my my time in California, and it sticks with me today. So I love Pepperdine University very much.
Years ago, I had an iconic judge, Judge Damon Keith, on. It was an honor. He was unbelievable. And in this vein of serving and giving, he said that law is a calling, it's a ministry. What does he mean by that, Nate?
Yeah, well, I agree with him. I think that law is a calling. It is a ministry. And I think that what that means is that you do it to the glory of God and to the service of other people. So as legal practitioners, as officers of the court, you have great training and you have great capacity to make a difference in the life of somebody who needs you very much. And I think that when you can offer that level of expertise to resolve a problem for them or advance a business effort for them in some way, if you can enhance their life in some way, but taking it a step further, not only enhancing them or helping them professionally, but doing so in a spirit of faith and doing so in a spirit of service where you display Christian qualities, love of neighbor, Christian kindness and charity, I think that you have great capacity to impact someone professionally and personally that way. So in addition to helping them resolve a problem or helping them with a business issue, you could also impact them spiritually. And I think that has great value as well. And I think that's at least part of what the judge was saying when he referred to law as a ministry.
We're talking to Nate Napper, and I'm Jack Krasula. And this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. This is Anything Is Possible. I'm your host, Jack Krasula. We're with Nate Napper. And from 2013 to 2016, he was an assistant attorney general with the Michigan Department of Attorney General. What does the assistant attorney general to the Michigan Department of Attorney General do? All do you get coffee and cake for the attorney general? Nate, what do you do?
Well, I would if I was asked to. You know, we do whatever the attorney general asks us to, I suppose. But I guess just to add a clarifying point, you know, there are numerous assistant attorneys general. I wasn't the only one, but I was one of a cadre of associate attorneys at the department there. And so, you know, for us, they call us assistant attorneys general. And so I did have that role for nearly 4 years. And, you know, one of the very great honors that I was able to participate in while I was an assistant AG was the state's first ever human trafficking commission. And I recall that this was organized very early when I started my career there. The attorney general at the time was AG Bill Schuette. And early in 2013, he organized a human trafficking commission to study the issue. Brought in a lot of different stakeholders from all around the state. It was a major initiative. And I'm not exactly sure how this happened, to be honest, but I was tapped to write the final report of the entire commission, something that eventually made its way to the legislature and to the governor's office. And based on that, we were able to overhaul the state's human trafficking statute to make sure that the laws were more favorable towards survivors so that we can address this issue in a more meaningful way.
That 4 years of your life, that four-year chapter, what's the biggest thing you learned in those 4 years?
You know, that's a good question. I think I learned a lot about the importance of preparing for the future that you want. You know, when I first started at the Attorney General's office, it wasn't where I had initially thought that I would begin my career. But I learned at that time that everything doesn't come together magically for you right away. There are dreams and goals that you have for yourself that I think you have to be patient and you have to build toward in order to realize. One of my very favorite quotes is by Winston Churchill. He said, "To each, there comes in their lifetime a special moment when they are figuratively tapped on the shoulder and offered the chance to do a very special thing, unique to them and fitted to their talents. What a tragedy if that moment finds them unprepared or unqualified for that which could have been their finest hour." And I love that because it speaks to the importance of preparing for that important moment. And I think that for me, the Attorney General's office was a time of significant preparation where I was learning about the law. I was learning what it meant to serve other people. I was honing my writing skills. And it was a time of great learning for me.
Since 2016, you've been a special agent for the federal government. And the first 6 months of that chapter was in training at Quantico in Virginia. The famous Quantico. Everybody knows about Quantico, but nobody's been there. Tell us about this training in Quantico.
Yeah, well, so Quantico, just so you understand, is our training academy down on a Marine Corps base in Virginia. So Quantico is, you know, colloquially referred to as our training academy. And so, you know, what don't you do at the academy? I can remember when I first arrived there on the campus, on base, we were sat down in an auditorium by the leader of the training division at the time. And she said, and I'll never forget, she said, "You know, by the end of this experience, you're going to be tired." And, you know, you sit there and you go in to the academy with, you know, a lot of expectations, and you're very well prepared and you're in the best shape of your life when you go in. And so you don't really think too much of that when you're first starting off. But I will tell you, Jack, when we reached the end of that 20-week, that 5-month period, she was so right. I was tired because it was a rigorous training curriculum. And in terms of what you do there, you do a little bit of everything. You do a lot of academic training. You do tactical driving. So there's an emergency driving segment to the training. You do a lot of firearms work, something you have to be very careful with. And then there's a lot of defensive tactics, mostly hand-to-hand combat. And then there's also some police tactics training in there as well. So room entries, making arrests, things of that nature. And it's a rigorous academy. It's a rigorous 20-week process. And I think it has to be because it really relates to the overall mission of my organization, which is to uphold the Constitution and defend the American people. So it's rigorous because it has to be. So I'm grateful for that training.
We're talking to Nate Napper. Nate, let's go now to February of 2017, you're in a church, and a 12-year-old girl tells her story. Tell us about Delin.
Sure. Yeah, Delin, wonderful person and a great friend of mine to this day. So actually, Delin was a little bit older when I met her. I believe she was in her early 30s when I met her at Woodside Bible Church over in Troy. I had just graduated from the FBI Training Academy at Quantico, and I went to church 1 week. And, you know, Woodside is a church of thousands of people, and so I'm just one of the congregants sort of sitting there toward the back by myself, just quietly listening. And all of a sudden, Doug Schmidt, who I think you've had on your show, he was the senior pastor at the time, wonderful man, great inspiration to many people, myself included, brings a woman named Delin up on the stage and introduces her as somebody who is a survivor of human trafficking. And I sat up in my chair a little bit when I saw Delin, because I felt like of all the people in the entire congregation, given my job, I was uniquely positioned to help her. I had been placed on the human trafficking squad coming out of Quantico. And as an agent, an investigator on that squad, I listened to a story of horrific exploitation in her life. And I wanted to know more about it. And so I approached her after the service and introduced myself and struck up a friendship with her that continues to this day. So Delin is a wonderful person, a survivor, has been through a lot in her life and has overcome, and so proud of her for that.
And a year and a half later, you start the Joseph Project.
Yeah.
Okay. First question, why the name the Joseph Project?
Yeah, one of our favorite questions. We get it a lot. And, you know, it's based, Jack, on the story from the biblical book of Genesis. Joseph was an unbelievable character from the scriptures, the Hebrew Bible. And, you know, I think that when people think of Joseph, their view is largely informed a lot of times today by the very famous Andrew Lloyd Webber theatrical production, Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat. So it's the same character. But I think that what sometimes is lost on people today when they hear about Joseph is that this was an individual who actually had a great deal of challenge and struggle in his life. And that primarily happened because he was trafficked into Egyptian slavery by his own brothers. Today, we might say that he was commercially exploited for labor services through force. So he's sold into slavery. He's made into a domestic servitude. He's falsely imprisoned. And then miraculously, because as the scriptures say, God was with Joseph, he rises out of prison at the command of the Egyptian pharaoh to become second in charge of the Egyptian empire. And so to us, the person of Joseph represents the story of a human trafficking survivor who transitions from exploitation to empowerment. And so when we think of the Joseph Project, and we named the project after it, that's really the journey that we try to facilitate for every survivor of trafficking, is this journey from exploited to empowered.
And here's a portion of Andrew Lloyd Webber's Joseph and the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat. We're talking to Nate Napper. If you want to learn more, www.josephproject.com. And I'm Jack Rasula. And this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR. Welcome back to Anything Is Possible. I'm Jack Rasula. We're with Nate Napper, the founder of the Joseph Project. All right, talk to us about the services that you offer through the Joseph Project, please.
Absolutely. So, you know, at its core, the central function of the Joseph Project is to connect human trafficking survivors with pro bono legal counsel. And the reason why this is so important is because very oftentimes you can rescue a survivor of trafficking from the immediate danger of a trafficking circumstance. But the reality is, coming out of that scenario, they are still not truly free. And the reason why is because they oftentimes have a variety of legal issues that are holding them back. We speak of it in terms of legal collateral damage. So take Delin, for example, the young woman we were just talking about a few moments ago. Delin was trafficked for many years in Detroit, and her experience culminated in a very vicious, violent assault by her exploiter, her pimp. And it was over a monetary dispute. And as a consequence, she was hospitalized for several days. And thankfully, you know, she made a full recovery, but she was charged for the medical bills associated with that assault. So imagine being trafficked, physically assaulted, and then charged the medical bills associated with your care. That's where Delin found herself in. And to make matters worse, she was then being sued for those debts when she unwittingly failed to pay them. And so the collection agency was coordinating with a law firm to bring an action against her. And Delin came to us and said, you know, I don't know what to do here. Help me. I'm not understanding what's happening to me. And I said, Delin, you really need, you need legal counsel here. And so we were able to set her up with a couple of pro bono attorneys who did wonderful work for her free of charge to clear her credit report, coordinate with the law firm to stop them from garnishing her wages, and to fully compensate the hospital for services that they had rendered to her through a victim compensation fund that the state has established. So, you know, that's just one example of a legal issue that could result from a trafficking experience. There are, of course, many more. But at the core, that's what the Joseph Project does. We connect survivors of trafficking with free legal help.
All right. You said that human trafficking arguably started 12,000 years ago, as told in the book of Genesis, Joseph's story. You claim it's an epidemic still today. How prevalent, Nate, is it?
Sure. Well, you know, around the world, you talk about epidemics. I mean, we're in the middle of a pandemic right now. We find ourselves in the middle of a COVID-19 global pandemic. So, you know, that word perhaps takes on a new meaning for some people, a problem that is really spreading all over the place across the globe. You know, not to compare the two directly, but if you think of human trafficking as a sort of disease, if you will, that has sort of infiltrated and spread to countries around the world, you know, I've seen statistics that range anywhere from 27 to 40 million slaves. That's according to the International Labor Organization. Here domestically, there are thousands of cases that are reported across the United States year over year. Those numbers tend to trend in an upward direction. That is, year over year, we're seeing increases. The data is incomplete. We don't have perfect numbers, but according to the snapshots that we do have out there, it is prevalent. And I will tell you, in my experience, I have seen it happen in all kinds of zip codes, from the very affluent to the very impoverished and every place in between. So it's pervasive, and it's violent, and it needs to be stopped.
If you want to learn more, www.josephproject.com. Nate, you've told us about Delin's stories. Can you profile two more survivors, please?
Sure. Yeah, I mean, one of our very favorite things is to share in the victories that our survivors experience when our legal first responders are fortunate to achieve those in court. You know, I think of one that pops into mind very readily. Young woman, again, dear friend of mine, remains to this day. Her name is Mary, and I was introduced to Mary through a volunteer here local to the area through Grace Centers of Hope. And Mary, earlier in her life, had been wrestling with some addiction issues, pretty serious ones. And there were people in her life that identified and exploited that addiction and began selling her for sex online. And as a consequence, Mary lost custody of a daughter. And that was unfortunate. And of course, Mary loves her daughter very much, but because of the circumstances, that custody was lost. But fortunately, Mary is a huge success story. Mary turned her life around. She went to Grace Centers of Hope. She finished their programs, and she is now employed by Grace Centers and is living in housing furnished by that program. And so, you know, when you make that transition and you turn things around that way, as a mother, Mary's mind ran to her daughter, and she wanted to reestablish a more formal custody arrangement with this daughter. And she had tried on numerous occasions to do that through the court system, and she was always refused. She will tell you that the courts and the judge at the bench consistently refused her because of the circumstances of her past. And so when we connected with Mary, it was clear to me that she needed a family law attorney and somebody who could help her through the system to address this custody issue. And so we connected her with a legal first responder skilled in family law matters. And working together with Mary through a series of hearings and court appearances, this attorney was able to achieve that custody arrangement for her. So Mary increased her custody of her daughter and also achieved an order that transitioned that daughter into a more favorable school district that Mary preferred her to be in. So I'll never forget the phone call that Mary placed to me after she learned that news, in tears, just so happy, crying, and could barely compose herself on the phone when we were discussing that victory. So that one meant a great deal to me personally and to the Joseph Project. So, you know, that's an example of a family law issue that we were able to address.
Nate, what have these victims taught you?
Well, they've taught me a lot about resiliency. You know, when you think about someone who's endured such a horrific form of exploitation, you know, human trafficking, the commercial exploitation of another person for sex or labor services through force, fraud, or coercion. So when you encounter somebody who's been exploited in this severe manner and you watch them bounce back and you watch them continue to fight, you learn a little bit about resiliency and the fact that you do not have to be defined by the circumstances of your past. Mary has learned today that the law no longer defines her by the circumstances of her addiction and some of the things that she experienced in her past. Rather, you can make a transition and you can still live the dreams that you envisioned for yourself years before life took a turn that you never expected. So they teach me a lot about resiliency and also about the power of forgiveness and moving on.
I quote you now, "We peddle hope." Nate, what is hope?
Well, you think about the biblical definition of hope. You know, Hebrews 11, verse 1 would say, now faith is the substance of things hoped for, the evidence of things not seen. And so, you know, hope has something to do with faith. Hope is belief in a better future, in my mind. It's the sometimes stubborn belief that the future can be brighter than the past. So for us at the Joseph Project, that's a fundamental quality, I guess, that we try to instill in the people that we work with, is that there is hope for a brighter day. There is hope for your future. But just because circumstances may have tried to break you, those circumstances can be reassembled for good. And that's really a specialty of the God that we serve.
We're talking to Nate Napper, the founder of the Joseph Project. If you want to learn more, www.josephproject.com. And I'm Jack Krasula, and this is Anything Is Possible on News Talk 760 WJR.
Jack Krasula, host of WJR's Anything Is Possible, the weekly radio visit, brings his 15 years of inspirational storytelling to hardcover. With God, anything is possible.
Anything is possible.
15 of Jack's more than 750 tales of defeating odds and achieving the extraordinary. Like Bob Woodruff, whose job covering the war in Iraq nearly cost him his life. And Nick Vujicic, the limbless evangelist who has stunned millions with his message of acceptance and grace. With God, anything is possible. Order now while signed copies are still available at trustinusllc.square.site. That's trustinusllc.square.site. And as Jack says,
make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spohol.
Anything is possible.
I'm Jack Krasula. This is Anything Is Possible. And we're talking to Nate Napper, who founded and runs the Joseph Project, which works to connect human trafficking survivors with pro bono legal services. Nate, if there's an abused woman tonight listening, what do you say to that woman?
Sure. Yeah, I appreciate that question. The first thing I would say is don't lose hope. The story's not over. Your future is still out in front of you. The second thing that I would say is do everything possible to extract yourself from the situation. I realize that that's not always possible, but to the extent that you are able to contact law enforcement in some way, whether that's an imminent danger, 911, or the Michigan State Police, the Detroit Police Department, the FBI, the Department of Homeland Security, call a law enforcement organization that will mobilize to help you right away. Extract yourself from that situation if you can.
If there's parents of a young woman listening tonight who are concerned and the mom's gut says something's wrong here, what are the signs? And Nate, what would you say to that mom and dad tonight?
Yeah, another important question. You know, in terms of the signs of human trafficking, I think that it really is important to talk about the prevalence of technology advance and about our cell phone and internet use. So, for example, a lot of times trafficking begins as a grooming process wherein a potential victim is identified online. And so the first thing that I would caution parents to watch out for is circumstances where your child, for example, is engaged in conversations through texting services or cell phone applications, and they don't know the individual in person who's on the other end of the line. So I think a very strong admonition that I would just offer up is, as a parent, be very aware of your child's technological use, especially their cell phones, because that's a very prolific way that trafficking occurs today. And I think, you know, some of the same principles apply even outside the technological space. So, you know, if you are seeing out in public, for example, a configuration of people that just doesn't seem to add up. So, for example, you have an older male individual, perhaps he's got two or three younger looking females around him. They don't appear to be related. The females appear to be under the control of the older male individual. Perhaps they don't have access to their cell phones. They won't look you in the eye. They're acting very deferential to you. These are signs that that maybe something is wrong here, and I should maybe follow up, get a picture of their license plate if it's safe to do so. Maybe report the circumstances to security personnel or, again, to law enforcement. Those are some strong cautions I would offer.
If by chance there's a trafficker tonight or a pimp listening, what do you say to him or her?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, I probably have a little bit of a different perspective on this than most. You know, I've heard a lot of people say, you know, these people are the scum of the earth, and they should be locked up for life or worse. And, you know, I understand that perspective, but as a worker within the justice system and as an attorney, I try to temper justice with a measure of compassion, even for people who on the surface don't deserve it. And I think, at the core, I think that stems from a fundamental understanding that that I don't deserve mercy from God, but He extends it to me in His Son, Jesus Christ, regardless. And so I would say to that exploiter, you need to stop what you're doing. It's a crime. You're hurting somebody at the deepest levels of their soul. But I would temper that with there's hope for you as well. There's forgiveness available, and that forgiveness is found in a God who loves you.
Speaking of a God who loves you, the devil would say, Nate, your efforts are just a drop in the bucket. Okay? I don't lose much sleep over you, Nate. What do you say to the darkness?
Well, you know, sometimes I think it's probably best to let our actions do the talking. I mean, I don't let that discourage me or dissuade me from my mission. You know, you talk about a drop in the bucket, and we talked about the tens of millions of slaves around the world and the thousands across our country. You know, part of the enormity of the challenge is actually what attracts me to the work. There's an individual named Scott Harrison, and he's the CEO of a nonprofit global in scope called Charity Water. And his mission is to provide clean water to everybody on Earth. And he recognizes the enormity of that challenge. And he recognizes that his work will never come to an end. But he says this, it's one of my favorite statements. He says, "Don't be afraid of work that has no end. If your work is in the service of others, if you're compassionately pursuing an end to the suffering of people less fortunate than you, then your work will simply never end. The idea of endless work used to scare me, but not anymore. Now it inspires me." So, you know, to me, the same can be said of trafficking as can be said for the global water crisis. I don't know that the work will ever officially come to an end, but when the enemy tries to discourage, you know, you fight back with, it is written, just like Jesus said when he was tempted in the wilderness. I think that's probably the best way to approach that.
Nate, you're the whole package. You're bright, you're personable, you're articulate, you're handsome. You look like I have always wanted to look. You could get rich as a law partner if you went into private practice. Why don't you do it?
Well, I guess speaking to the looks first, you know, it's funny, we were joking off air there before the segment that, you know, the barbershops really need to open up, Jack. The shelter in place order, you know, it's really hurting the hairstyle right now. It's probably longer than people are used to seeing. So maybe I could stand to go with your hair for a while. but you know, in terms of private legal practice, I mean, of course, you know, a lot of people take that route, and it is a more lucrative route. I mean, I'm not going to deny that. But I think the reason I don't, at least at this stage of my life, is because, frankly, money has never been the motivating factor for me. I always was more interested in something that made my life feel like it had a larger meaning. And I think that that meaning is primarily found in the two greatest commandments, which are to love God and then to love other people. And I think that, you know, when you think about a mission like defending the American people, upholding the Constitution of the United States, connecting exploited individuals with free legal help, to me, that almost has more meaning and more love behind it than earning more money. So I think that's why, because it has more meaning to me.
Nate, you inspire everyone who's honored to meet you. Please keep up the great work.
Thanks, Jack. I appreciate you having me on.
Please join us next Saturday. Until then, I'm Jack Krasula. Thanks for listening, and make it a great week, because with God, anything is possible. Spohn. Believe in yourself.